Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas, Nevada on Free FM. 866-313-FREE-3733. You might want to call in today. We're not going to be talking psychotic long rants of me laughing at magicians doing shows at funerals. This is actually, we're going to talk about politics today a little bit. PennRadio@gmail.com. That's PennRadio at gmail.com. PennRadio.com. Happy Jack is right here in the room with us. He's checking your Gmails as I speak, so you can talk to him directly that way. Michael Goudeau is sailing somewhere. He's taking sailing lessons. And I've had different people sitting in the seat opposite me. And today is, with all due respect to Matt King, with all due respect to Mercedes, he'll be here tomorrow, is the one I'm most excited about. He was supposed to be here yesterday, but he flaked out and Matt King filled in for him. He's here today. This is Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., who first got famous when he wrote a book called Deadly Force about his father prosecuting police officers in Boston. And then he went on to be Senator Moynihan's senior advisor, and a little bit after that became my senior advisor, which he's been for years. And then when he got that job, he moved into television, moved into Los Angeles, got a job on The West Wing, where he was, what were you, head writer there?
I was one of the writers, and in the last year, one of the executive producers and writers. And, well, you used the word fired there.
No,
in the middle.
You weren't fired.
I don't think I've ever been fired from anything.
You were never? Not a thing?
Give me some time to think. I certainly was not fired from anything involved with Senator Moynihan in the Senate. We had a long, happy work life together of about 8 years.
I just wanted to say the word fired. It's remarkable, having known you for all these years and knowing you as well as I do, that you haven't been fired.
Yeah, I should. Well, here's the thing. I haven't worked very much. I've had very few jobs. You know, the first job I ever had was working in the Senate. I'd never had a job
before. That's not true. You were a parking lot
attendant. Yes. I was a parking attendant while I was going to college and for an uncomfortably long period after college. And but, you know, I was secretly writing a book when I was a parking attendant after college, and that took a very long time because I didn't know how to write anything.
Are there any parking attendants that aren't writing books?
Yeah, actually, most of the parking attendants I knew weren't writing or reading books even. But you know, so I was a freelance itinerant writer for years, and then I stumbled into politics because of the Writers Guild strike in 1988.
You were a scab?
Yeah, no. The Writers Guild strike, you know, which
is kind of a commie. You shouldn't be a scab.
The Hollywood writers went on strike in 1988, and it lasted 6 months. And that's when Senator Moynihan was running for re-election, and he had been a college professor of mine. He asked me to come into his campaign, and I had nothing to do. I also had nothing to contribute to the campaign, as far as I could tell. But it didn't matter, because he was a guy who always won with 2/3 of the vote, no matter who was involved in the campaign. So I went in there, and then that ended up becoming a mini career. It ended up being an 8-year involvement.
And then on The West Wing, didn't you write the final episode?
No, I didn't. John Wells, who was the permanent executive producer of the show, the only one who was there from start to finish, wrote the season finale. I wrote four of them in this last season, including the adventurous live episode we did, which was a live debate episode, which actually got us our biggest audience, the live thing being a fairly reliable ratings gimmick in TV. But in our show, it was justified artistically because it was a debate. And so we wanted to put the actors under exactly what that pressure is in the real world of debating, which is that you're going up
not
live.
Exactly.
Exactly, except that every word was written for them.
Exactly.
Exactly. Although, you know, what's the difference? I mean, in the real debates, the real presidential debates, in fact, every single word is written. Every mm-hmm. single word.
But now, the order is not sure.
But they just have to. Yeah, the order isn't guaranteed. But you'll notice they just program in those answers all the time. And by the way, even the moments that people mistakenly think of as spontaneous, for example, the so-called great Lloyd Benson moment, mm-hmm. Where he was debating Dan Quayle in the vice presidential debate. Lloyd Benson just died last week, former senator from Texas, and a great guy who I worked with in the Senate and when he was Secretary of the Treasury. But Lloyd had that great line where he says to Dan Quayle, you know, I knew Jack Kennedy, you know, you're no Jack Kennedy. That was written. And they were looking for the moment in the debate for him to say that. And it played as if it was natural because Lloyd found exactly the right moment to bounce it off of Quayle. But there was nothing spontaneous about
it. But that's, you know, that's your job as someone in that debate is you have a flow chart of what do they got? Probably like 5 hours of debate stuff. And they have to pick the 1 hour they're going to do, right?
No, they have a lot less than 5 hours.
Really?
Normally what you're seeing in a debate is literally everything the politician knows about the subject. They don't have one more sentence. and that's all you need. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton was really good in press conferences with the White House press corps for the following mathematical reason. Bill Clinton knew a full index card worth of material on most federal governing subjects. The White House press corps doesn't know anything about most federal governing subjects. So if you're in, you know, Wolf Blitzer or, you know, those guys who are White House press correspondents, he isn't anymore. They have to be ready in a press conference when the president shows up with a question about defense, a question about taxation, or a question about Medicare or Social Security, or maybe five other things. So they don't know those subjects. But they know that if someone else has already asked the Medicare question, then they can't use their Medicare question. So they then have to look down and use their tax question. So the Wolf Blitzer types know exactly one line of an index card worth of material about these subjects. And a guy like Clinton knows the whole index card. You know, Bush is about even with the press. He doesn't know much more than they do. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is that even the most well-versed presidents know extremely little. And the trick is, how much verbiage can you attach to this very small thing you're saying? If you look at a Clinton answer in a press conference, there's about, you know, there might be a half of a factual point that is made using 85 words in the answer. You know, Bush might come up with basically the same answer, but it'll only give you 7 words, and that gets ruled as stupid.
Uh-huh. But Bush is not stupid, right?
I don't know. I don't know him. Yeah. And you know, having worked with politicians closely, I no longer have a civilian opinion of them. I never have an opinion of a politician who I don't actually know and who I didn't, and usually who I haven't actually worked with and know well, because I ran into a lot of surprises. I mean, Al D'Amato, who was the junior senator from New York when I went to work for the senior senator from New York, was someone who I had no regard for at all when I was sitting out there as a citizen, just looking at, you know, at the operations there. When I got to work with him, I discovered there was a very smart guy there who was really capable in certain very specific areas, who was great to have on your team when you were trying to get something done. And, you know, and also I have, you know, generally I have a much lower rating of politicians' intelligence than the average person does. I mean, you know, Al Gore is going through a resurgence now.
Yeah.
I'm no fan of Al Gore. I never was. And it's on a personal basis of having worked with him and interacted with him. And I don't think he's very bright. And I don't think he's an interesting guy. I have nothing really positive to say about him based on having worked with him. Now, if I hadn't worked with him, I might have a civilian opinion of him that would be much higher.
Now, you speaking of people that you've worked with and you know about and are in the news, Hillary Clinton,
yeah,
is going to run for Senate again and win, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she's going to run for president, right?
I believe she's going to run for president.
Yeah.
I believe, to put it correctly, she is running for president. See,
right.
There's a misunderstanding about running for president. People think it begins when you announce. I mean, Mario Cuomo ran for president.
Mm-hmm.
He just quit running for president literally the day before he was going to announce running for president. But he was running, in effect, for president for a couple of years.
But there's an easy that is an easy time to get out if
it's
not
right.
going as well as
That's
you want.
Right. But, I mean, he got out when the engines were running on an airplane in Albany to take him to New Hampshire to file his candidacy papers on the last day of the deadline
right.
from the New Hampshire primary. That's when he decided to not do that. Having told people a week before that privately that he was going to do it. So Hillary's running now, and she's the front runner. And, you know, she could win. She could certainly get the nomination, and she could certainly win the presidency.
866-313-FREE. That's 3733 if you want to call. And talking to Lawrence O'Donnell, and I want to just give people some background. I have known you, what, 15 years? Something like that.
I'm thinking it's around 1990.
Yeah. And during the time that I've known you, you have been one of the most articulate people I've known, one of the best informed people I've known. You've been a pundit on many shows. You're on the McLaughlin Group all the time. You're always talking politics. You always make an argument that I believe completely, and you are, without exception, always wrong. Is that correct?
I've been right a few times.
When were the most important times you've been right? Because you called me and said that Kerry had won. You said he.
Oh,
had.
Yeah. Well, because that on Election Day 2004, we all had these exit polls that turned out shockingly to be wrong. What's really funny about that is that this is coming right after the presidential election where the exit polls were just wildly wrong. And so here we were completely reliant on them again 4 years later. And I promise you, in the next presidential election, we'll all be sitting there with the 2 p.m. exit polls completely confident of the outcome, and I will call you and tell you at 2 p.m. who has won. And you can, run down to the strip and make a bet on it. We got fooled by the exit polls. It made sense. I mean, it made sense. Kerry winning and the exit polls made sense, actually, based on all the polling information we had had for the previous 3 days. There was a certain momentum. What you look for in polling is momentum, and he had it. But those polls were wrong, too. So, there isn't anything better, than the exit polls. I would never want to bet against the exit polls. You can't make a living doing that.
Now, with Hillary Clinton, there's this nutty thing. When Lieberman was running, he was saying for vice president, he was saying these incredibly anti-Hollywood, pro-censorship, conservative, religious, wacko things. But he was a Democrat. So that the Democrats had a vote for him. Now, isn't what Hillary's doing, I mean, to a dumb guy, to just simplify it a lot, isn't what she's doing being as conservative as she possibly can, knowing that no liberal and no Democrat can vote against a woman and can vote against Hillary? Well, I mean, doesn't she just say, I'm pro-war, don't burn the flag, everything. She wants to have Bush's point of view, all the parts that people liked about him, and then just be a woman to keep the liberals on board. Isn't that the plan?
No. but it's weirdly close. Look, here, the basic thing you said there at the beginning about she's trying to be as conservative as she can. Every Democrat running for president, when they get the nomination, should be trying to be as conservative as they can possibly be while avoiding gigantic headlines with the phrase flip-flop in it. Mm-hmm. So you can't suddenly flip-flop on abortion, when you're the Democratic nominee. But if possible, for example, the Democratic nominee will be much better off if the Democratic nominee is against partial birth abortion, mm-hmm. as the Republicans call it, and then Roe versus Wade on everything else. And down the line, taxes. When Bill Clinton ran for president, what did he say about taxes? He said one thing about taxes. He's going to do a tax cut. I, Bill Clinton, am going to do a middle-class tax cut. I was sitting there in the Senate looking at the finances of the United States, which is public information, wondering how he was going to do a tax cut since there was a gigantic deficit at the time and how can you finance the government. So Bill Clinton, his first address as president, his first address from the Oval Office at the desk was to say, I've just looked at the books. We don't have all the money. I just thought we had a lot of money. We don't. I'm not going to do a middle-class tax cut. What I'm going to do is the biggest tax increase in history. That's not what they called it, but that's what it was. I did it. I was the chief of staff of the Senate Finance Committee at the time where the tax bill had to come.
And you would call me up and tell me how much it was going to screw me.
Because it was the high income. It was high income, and in fact, we had what we called a surtax on millionaires.
Yeah, I know. It was $250,000.
That's right.
$250,000 was a millionaire.
That's what we Democrats defined as a millionaire. Anyone who makes $250,000 a year. We think of millionaires as the amount of money you'd acquire during a presidency. That's a millionaire. You know, time periods in economics are arbitrary. You can pick 1 year, you can pick 4 years to measure whatever you're doing. So millionaire
tax.
Yeah, millionaire tax. And Bush has repealed all of that now that I'm a millionaire, according to the Democratic Party. Bush kindly repealed the tax that I imposed when I was not a millionaire. And it's worked out rather nicely for me.
Very nicely for you. Who's going to run against Hillary?
John Kerry's running very actively. He'll be strong. People count him out, you know, in a very standard new American political way, which is that he lost. Mm-hmm. It used to be you had to lose once to get the nomination. You know, people used to run exploratory. They would run so you'd get to know their name so that then the next time you'd actually be willing to vote for them.
Give us some examples of that.
Well, you know, Nixon, yep. Reagan ran for the Republican nomination, didn't get it, you know. LBJ ran, didn't get it, you know. Adlai Stevenson, you know, got the nomination two times in a row. Lost both times, mm-hmm. which is not a good advertisement for the John Kerry campaign. but he's a really serious candidate, and he's a really good campaigner. See, here's a thing that people – in this country now, there's this weird thing that happens in presidential elections. If you lose by one vote, you are considered a horrible loser who must be banished from our sight. It's nutty. I mean, John Kerry was and is a Massachusetts liberal. Those are the two worst words that can be attached to an American politician. He came within a flip of 40,000 votes in Ohio of beating an incumbent president during wartime. That's an extraordinary political achievement, especially for a Massachusetts Democrat who shouldn't have come within 20 points of a sitting Republican president. Anyway, he did it. He's a very, very good campaigner. You know, in baseball, if your team – this is a sports thing, so you're not going to follow this. Okay. It's for the audience. Okay. In baseball, if your team goes to the seventh game of the World Series and loses by one run in the 15th inning – that's extra – normally there's nine innings.
Okay,
so that means it's like a tie game like for a long time.
Okay.
And they lose
for six innings. It
a long time. Yeah, and they lose in the 15th inning. The losing fans don't walk out of the stadium saying, "What a bunch of bums." That's what happens in American politics. If you lose that way in American politics, it's the same as losing by like 50 points. You know, it's stunning. And anyway, Kerry's strong. Joe,
we're gonna wait.
Go ahead.
866-313-3733. Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. is here. Will Hillary Clinton be our next president? I'm going to ask Lawrence O'Donnell that outright after this. Call in 866-313-FREE because you sure as hell know as much as he does. Penn Jillette here with Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., one of the stars of Big Love, where he plays a lawyer that has three wives. Holding the mirror up to nature. 866-313-FREE, 3733. We're talking a lot about politics because that's what LOD knows. PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. I want to throw this in because I've been doing it every day. If you love the music on this show, it's all done by Mike Jones. If you're listening to Chicago, he and his trio of really competent musicians, not just me playing bass, but a monster bass player, monster drummer, are playing the Green Mill Friday and Saturday in Chicago. And if enough of y'all show up, he's going to play some monkey music for y'all. So we all know we love that monkey music. But getting off the monkeys and into politics, let's take line four. Let's talk to Alex. How you doing, Alex?
Hey, can you hear me?
Oh, very well, sir. How are you?
Oh, good. Well, I had a question for you.
Sure, shoot.
Yeah, I was just wondering what would be the chances of Hillary Clinton and Condoleezza Rice running both as primaries?
I'll let LOD take that.
I think the chances are possible. The Condoleezza Rice will not run for president.
Oh, okay.
The question is simply, will Condoleezza Rice accept an invitation to be the vice presidential slot on the ticket, the Republican side? So you could see Hillary for president and Condoleezza for vice president, but so they wouldn't end up debating each other. You wouldn't get to see that wonderful little moment.
Catfight.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say that.
Okay, thanks. Let's take line five. Let's take Corey. What's up, Corey?
Hey, Ken. Just wanted to find out what your guest thinks of Karl Rove, and is he actually the evil puppet master that's pulling the strings?
I think, listen, I was the person who revealed a year ago that Karl Rove was the source for Time magazine on the Valerie Plame leak case. Look, here's the funny thing about Rove. There was a book written about Rove called Bush's Brain, and that is the conventional wisdom in the press that Rove is this genius. He's this political genius. I think he's a disaster. I think you've never seen a White House in more trouble just for badly played politics than this White House. The only White House that's been in more trouble than this was the Nixon White House, and that was for criminality. And that led to the end of the presidency. But this White House is polling at the bottom of the known polling scale for presidents because of Rove's complete failure as a politician and weakness of mind. So, I mean, you know, this Bush's brain thing is ridiculous. He's a complete failure at his
job. Well, how did Bush win then?
Well, it's not hard to win when you're aiming for 51% of the vote. That's not a hard thing to do.
But the other guy's aiming for 51, too.
Yeah, but, okay, first of all, it's who you're running against. Go back to John Kerry. He's a Massachusetts liberal. Just tell me, how can you lose? How can you possibly lose against a Massachusetts liberal? How could you have come that close against a Massachusetts liberal? How can you, having had an over 90% approval rating during your first term, come to within a flip of 40,000 votes in Ohio? How can you be that bad and that weak?
And how do you win the first time?
What I'd like to really know is how can they continue to do the things that they do and yet dupe the American people into other things? I mean, into thinking about other things.
Look, we all pay attention to politics at different speeds.
Liberal media, which I don't believe they are, they come out with a story talking about the number three CIA guy being investigated by the FBI for running a gambling and prostitution ring out of the Watergate Hotel for defense contractors and for congressmen. And next thing you know, Bush comes out with his lovely amnesty for illegal immigrants, and that's all the media talks about.
It's like, okay, first of all, this liberal... Please, the liberal conspiracy theory about the world is against us is nutty. Okay, when you find yourself thinking that way, you're out there in a nut zone. The president of the United States, the current president of the United States, is by far the most active and serious thinker about the Mexican border and the immigration issue across the Mexican border than any president we have ever had. This is one area where I would say this guy has been brave, he's been thoughtful, and he has spent a tremendous amount of political capital on it because he knows it. He's a practical Texan. He gets it. So when liberals want to say, oh, he suddenly popped up with the immigration issue, he's been on it longer than any Democrat and longer than anyone else in federal office.
But it's like
that's my defense of President Bush. There won't be another one. It's the only subject that I actually admire him on.
Well, the thing is they keep it in their pocket until there's...
Didn't keep it in his pocket. He's been talking about it for years.
And then all of a sudden they bring it out now. I mean, it's
nothing sudden about it.
Ever. And
nothing
all of a sudden
now about
it's important to him.
But also there's this idea that you have that, and this is something I read in the papers and always surprises me, that Bush is getting away with all this incompetence and all this insanity.
It's crazy.
He's not. It's the lowest polls anyone's ever had. People hate him.
Yeah, if he could just get away with something. You know, he could get his approval rating up to like 40. He's not getting away with anything. We all pay attention to politics at different speeds. I pay attention to it on a daily basis. I actually am looking forward in politics. Most people look at politics in the rearview mirror. It lands on them months after something has happened. There's a cumulative effect over time. Most people didn't turn against the president on a competence level the week that Katrina was wiping out New Orleans. The Katrina effect hit about 2 months later. They kind of looked back on it and went, wow, that was really badly done. And I have no complaint about that. Most people follow sports much more closely than they follow politics, and it takes them a while to make their judgments about these people. And the country has turned against this president overwhelmingly. The only thing that that could reasonably bother liberals about him now is that he's still in office. He has no relevance, and he has no powers other than war-making powers.
Let's take line six. Let's talk to Paul. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Mr. Penn, Mr. O'Donnell, nice to talk to you.
Hey, Paul.
Well, you were talking about Hillary, and you were talking about John Kerry, and I'll just preface what I'm about to say by saying, you know, I've read a great deal of political history. I mean, back to the Founding Fathers and Thomas Paine's Common Sense, which basically laid out what the Founding Fathers followed for.
Okay, you're overqualified for me. I can't talk to anyone who's read that stuff. I read the daily newspaper. Books is way beyond me.
Well, my point
go ahead,
is that,
your point.
That Paine never meant for there to be, you know, our Founding Fathers never meant for there to be career politicians, which is what we've wound up with in this day. And the guy that I admire and the guy I hope runs for president here and you haven't talked about is John Edwards. And I think
why do you admire John Edwards?
The last time around, I think maybe that 40,000 vote flip you keep talking about might not have happened.
Why do you admire John Edwards? What is it that you admire about him?
Well, it's the way he understands public service, but he understands public service in something other than the form of politics.
Well, let me put it to you another
way.
He's very
well thought. He's had a, you know, as a congressman, I think he did a good job for his constituents. You didn't hear anybody bitch-moaning or complaining about it. And you know, he's an outstanding guy. He's a guy of morals, a guy of principles, and a guy that gives a lot of thought to anything he does. And that's
well,
the kind of person that we need in politics.
Let me describe John Edwards another way. He just technical correction. He wasn't a congressman. He was a senator. Okay, for 6 years, he did one term as a senator. The thinking is that he did not run for reelection because he couldn't get reelected in North Carolina. And his senatorial achievement record is exactly zero. There's not a single change in American law because of John Edwards. He could be described as having done nothing. The reason I asked you why you liked him is I listened to every word Edwards said when he was running for president. I never heard him say one substantive thing. I understood him to be opposed to racism and poverty. I am too. I never heard him say he wanted to write a law that addressed racism or write a law that addressed poverty. It was, to me, the simpleton campaign the last time around. And it was, it was the most empty of all the campaigns, as far as I could tell. But people love the guy, and it remains something of a mystery to me.
Well, thanks a lot. We want to take one, before we go to break, let's take one more call with Sherry on line three. This is Sherry. How you doing, Sherry?
Hi. I've been listening to Mr. O'Donnell, and if I didn't know better, I'd swear I was listening to Bill O'Reilly.
Well, those old boys, you know, O'Donnell, O'Reilly.
You know, he's as much a politician as anybody I've ever met in this area, and I've lived here for 30 years. How can he say that Lloyd Benson's comment about Kennedy was scripted when they
it's
had no idea
history.
That Quayle was going to mention John Kennedy's name?
No, they did know.
Ludicrous.
I can tell you
and
why.
Another thing I'd like to say is
she
that...
She can't hear me, right?
You know, he must have lived in the Washington area, and I used to watch the West Wing all the time. And how could there have been so many mistakes about the street names and crap like that on West Wing? Didn't anybody go over those scripts to make sure that they were authentic?
No.
It really bothers me.
There were a lot of mistakes in the West Wing, and I caught
well,
a bunch of them.
They were tiny mistakes, but, you know, it bothers people who know.
Oh, there were giant mistakes. I can tell you there's huge mistakes in the West Wing. In the first year,
I can't hear you very well.
In the first year of the West Wing, we actually appointed a congressman, a member of the House of Representatives, which was completely preposterous because that's never happened in the history of the Republic. When the story was a congressman dies and we appoint his wife to take the office, and that of course can't happen. And so this show, you know, when congressmen die, we don't care because there's so many of them. We just don't care. When senators die, you replace them immediately with an appointment. But look, I could talk for the rest of the show on mistakes that were in the West Wing.
But do say how we know that the Lloyd Benson having that thing scripted ahead of time.
Well, because the Benson campaign has revealed it. They've known that it's public information. And yes, everybody knew when you're anticipating what is Quayle going to say. One of the raps on Quayle was how old he was. He's so young. He's so inexperienced. Quayle's line was, I have more experience than John Kennedy did when he became president. So
he had to say that.
So you knew he was going to say it.
866-313-FREE. That's 3733. You can talk to me, or people seem to prefer to talk to Lawrence O'Donnell Jr., who has many wives on Big Love. We'll be back after this. That's Mike Jones doing the Penn Jillette music there. He'll be playing at the Green Mill in Chicago Friday and Saturday night. Go on down and see everything. Steve Dahl's going to be there hanging out. Check out Steve Dahl's Scar. And if you're all nice enough, Mike Jones plays some monkey music. Mike Jones plays on the Penn & Teller show over the Rio every night, but here he'll be playing some serious bebop with his jazz trio and a much, much, I don't mean to damn with faint praise, but a much better bass player than me. And we got Lawrence O'Donnell here that we're who we are talking to. And let's take a call. I wanted to go more about the street names being wrong on West Wing.
Actually, the street names, I think, is what we got right. I mean, look, the West Wing, I think, was actually the most realistic, accurate show on commercial TV. At the same time, it had a tremendous number of mistakes in it over the years. I mean, I could discuss it either way. I could discuss how accurate it was or how inaccurate it was.
But compared to other shows.
Compared to other shows.
I mean,
compared to the jurisprudence on TV, you know, the 2-minute trials and every person who's arrested confessing to murder on Law and Order.
Well, that's the Law and Order, what? They have that special music that means they're going to turn.
Yeah.
When the synthesizer comes in, they flip. Also, we can talk about this here. We can talk about it downtown. The thing that bothers me the most in all television.
Right.
That's not a choice you're given. If you're not arrested, you don't have to go downtown to talk.
No, there's a great scene in the cop shows all the time where the suspect, who we by this time are convinced is a bad guy and has done it, is sitting there and the cop is talking to him and the suspect's lawyer is sitting beside him. And the lawyer says to the suspect, "Don't answer that question." And the suspect looks at the lawyer and then looks at the cop and just at a gut level needs to answer the question, then does, and goes to prison for the rest of his life. Yeah.
Yeah, there's also the lawyers will stop you.
Yeah, they'll put their hands over your mouth if they have to.
They will. That's what they're supposed to do. We have a phone call. Let's take Chuck, who's on line one.
Yes,
how you doing, Chuck?
Good. Very well. Two thoughts. I would like to know your opinion. One, I think the only thing that could derail Hillary is that she's so far ahead in the polls that anything less than expected could derail her as previous candidates. And two, whatever happened to Bill Bradley? He still has $15 million in the bank. And like you said, is he now dead because he lost to Gore?
Well, he isn't to me. Look, I worked with Bill Bradley. I loved him. I think he was a great senator. And he was, I think, a really good presidential candidate. He's someone who was fully prepared to be president. I really very much wanted him to be president. And I would love to see him get in it again. Chris Dodd is getting in it, probably, from Connecticut. He's a very solid guy. He'll have trouble rounding up money with Hillary in there. But you are absolutely right. Hillary's only problem at the moment is being the presumed front runner, and if she doesn't keep a lead that is really substantial, then the momentum will shift on her because her lead isn't big enough.
Right. Well, thank you. But also, does Bradley even consider going back into the race?
I think Bill's out of it. I don't think he's going to come back into it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Let's take. Who's going to run for the Republicans?
That's much more open. I mean, look, John McCain is the practical front runner. Rudy Giuliani wants to do it. He won't be able to get the nomination, I don't think. I think if McCain is the Republican nominee, he's going to be very hard to beat for any Democrat. the way things are now. However, McCain is very tightly attached to the war in Iraq. So if that's going really badly, McCain's problem will have to be figuring out how to distance himself from something he has embraced.
Let's take line four, Charles.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing, man?
How y'all doing? Hey, what's up? Who's the guy who's with you? I forgot his name.
Lawrence O'Donnell.
Well, Warren, who do you think a Republican is going to run for president? And, you know, who is going to be like the guy who, like, you know, just, like, separate the Republicans? Like, ah, oh, crap, I'm just screwing up, you know? I'm sorry, but anyway, I'm trying to say who's the Republican who might have a chance to reconnect to the American people and say, hey, we're all, like, worse, you're not all F-ups, you're not all screw-ups.
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
You know, that's a candidate. I created the fictional version of that on the West Wing this past year with Alan Alda running as the Republican candidate that that would appeal to both Republicans and independents and Democrats, all three of them. I think probably Giuliani's the closest thing to that, the person who would have a lot of cross appeal to people of different political stripe all over the country. But I think it's unlikely that he will get the nomination.
As a
before I go, all right?
Sure.
One thing. Hello?
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
One thing. You think one day in this life, my lifetime, your lifetime, an independent president might actually win an election or become president?
Definitely. Ross Perot.
Thanks a lot for calling, Charles.
Definitely. Ross Perot would have won if he didn't exhibit too many indications of being crazy toward the end of the campaign.
But Ross Perot deck was so stacked in favor of Democrats and Republicans.
No,
you
it isn't.
Really think someone has a
no,
chance?
No, it's not. It's stacked in favor of Democrats, Republicans, and billionaires. Ross Perot, if he was not crazy, would have won that election. Ross Perot was leading in that election in May of that year. Ross Perot beat Bill Clinton in a few states. You know, Bill Clinton came in third in some states to Ross Perot. So if you get yourself, and by the way, we have more and more bored billionaires in the United States, and they're finding their way into the Senate. You know, John Corzine from New Jersey, now governor of New Jersey. These guys are going to make their presence felt. I think you will probably have an independent billionaire who gets himself or herself elected to the presidency definitely sometime in this century.
So all the campaign reform laws really just throw out everybody except billionaires.
That's right, because you can spend no matter every law allows an individual to spend as much of their own money as they want when they're running for any office.
And what's the campaign cost? All in?
To be reasonable,
what I got to pay?
You have to have $100 million.
$100 million.
Yeah.
You start out, and how much of that do you get back if you're president?
You get back $400,000 a year over 4 years.
Wow, but you can make other deals on the side, can't you?
Well, you get book deals, which will get you like, you know, $12 million. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, $12 million.
We're not there yet.
And then speaker, you get to speak.
You get to speak.
And your speaker fees are what, $150,000?
Yeah, you get to speak. Look, Bill Clinton right now is probably having $20 million years.
Right, so you can make that back.
Oh, it if you live long enough. Yeah.
Let's take.
I don't think anyone's going to be advising it as an investment strategy.
But $100 million, you get $100 million. At least. Well, don't say at least. What's the real amount?
It goes up every 4 years. So I would say, you know,
I want to run for president.
If you want to do it,
2008.
Let's say 2008 as an independent. I'd say bring $130 million.
And should I make you my chief of staff?
No, because I don't know how to do it.
Okay, but I bring you on as something, don't I?
As a hanger on. Yes.
Okay. Let's take line one, Brendan.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing very well. How you doing?
Good. I have a question now. Do you think having the first American female president would have a negative effect in the sense of they would have so many things against them, people against them, that they would have to go out of their way to prove themselves, and it might actually cause even more global conflict.
No, well, there's no history of that. When you look at female heads of state in other countries, which, by the way, are far more sexist than this country, like the United Kingdom and Israel, The female heads of state that they've had have not been in any way stylistically different from the male heads of state. And I don't think it would make any difference here. I believe that this country is absolutely ready to elect a woman president, to elect a black president, to elect a Hispanic president. And it's simply a question of what are the policies of that person. I think Colin Powell, if he ran for president, would win with over 60% of the vote. Well, and, you know, so it's really who, what are the policies of that person?
But, you know, if you talk to Karen Russell, our friend, mm-hmm. African-American, she says that any black president would be assassinated. Do you believe that there's a real danger there?
No. The Secret Service knows how to do the job now. They lost one, and they, you know, they got another one hurt very badly, and so they've learned a lot. But look, I'm from Massachusetts, and everyone, you know, talks about Barack Obama. You know, the people think of him as the first black senator. Well, you know, Illinois had a black woman senator in the early 90s. Massachusetts had a black senator when I was a kid, Edward Brooke. He was a Republican senator. When I was a kid in Massachusetts, and I know racists in South Boston who voted for the black candidate. They voted for Ed Brooke for senator and George Wallace for president. Okay, and those racists would say to me, "I'm not a racist. I voted for Ed Brooke." And the reason they voted for Ed Brooke is that they liked his policies, and so the policies transcend everything in American politics. If you put a black woman up there running for president who says, "I will cut your taxes," and you put a white male up there who says, "I won't," I promise you the black woman tax cutter will beat the white male non-tax cutter.
So you don't think that the racism or sexism is a problem in politics at all?
I don't think realistically it is. I think it's the policies. I think we're past it. We've proven it in too many racist places, actually. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Boston has a very strong racist streak in it, and it had no problem voting for Ed Brooke, a black candidate, back when it was a more racist place.
Mm-hmm. So what are Hillary's chances of being the next president of the United States?
They're as good as they get. You know, this is the distance from the election that's impossible to predict. But, you know, the solid front runner for a nomination for president, I mean, look— basically, as the Democrat or the Republican, you have roughly a 50% chance of becoming president. That's way better than mine. You know, I mean, that's a really good chance. You know, you just need the wind blowing in the right direction to win that.
And you think it'll be Hillary against McCain for the next?
If I had to bet right now, I'd say Hillary against McCain, and then it all depends on what's going on in Iraq, who wins that.
And what will Gore do? Will Gore come way in for Hillary and help out now that he's got all this movie star status?
I don't think anyone's going to want Gore to help out. The Democratic nominee won't want him. He doesn't wear very well. He's much better as a movie promoter than as a candidate.
Yeah, I know, because people seem to really, really like him. Okay, we should end the show. This is Ben Gillette. I'm here with Lawrence O'Donnell, and who's on Big Love. That's where you can see him. Big Love as a lawyer. I will be back tomorrow with Mercedes, who is a Vegas radio star. She'll be sitting in for Michael Goudeau, who is sailing. Probably some Lord of the Flies thing going on now.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.